welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.10. Good Saturday for Michigan. Frankie and Houston look good. Hockey bounces back. And oh yeah, some team won the Big Ten football championship. You know the drill. We can't start any sort of conversation about hockey before addressing the biggest football game of the weekend. The Detroit Lions have won a game for the first time in a year. Are you even sober yet?
Well, we'll leave that for later. it was an interesting game.
Were you excited? Like, did you jump around?
I just started laughing. That's pretty. Because they go into halftime up 20-6.
Yeah. And you knew that wasn't lasting.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, how is it going to happen this week? And, I mean, then that whole second half, you know, the Vikings are coming back and they're, you know, moving the ball over the Lions defense. But the Lions, they were the anti-Michigan. They managed to stop all of Minnesota's two-point attempts. And that was kind of the story of the game. Is that it would have been a different score if Minnesota had just kicked the field goal, you know, the extra points and stuff. But
now you sound like Craig.
The Lions stuffed them every time, and that kind of kept your hope in it because it's like, well, at least they're coming up with a big play when it matters. And then, you know, they have the ball with, like, whatever it is, 4 minutes to go, and they go for it on that 4th-and-1 that's got everybody riled up. And
where were they on the field when they went for it?
Their own 30.
Well, good for Dan Campbell.
So my argument was the Dan Campbell haters on Twitter.
Is he accruing them?
In the last few weeks.
Because they've lost to teams that are probably not very good?
Because there have been some pretty bad things that have happened in the last few weeks.
Like starting that Boyle
kick. The Thanksgiving game when they call two straight timeouts and get a 5-yard penalty and then line their DBs up past the line of scrimmage when a first down ends the game. Like, that was bad. There's no way around it. That was bad.
Yeah.
But I'm fine going for it there because, number one, I'm watching this game, which apparently people were not. And number two, I've been watching the Lions a long time. If you punt that ball away, here's what happens. The Vikings drive down, they run the timeout, they kick a field goal at the buzzer, and they win. It's just a fact. It's just like, they are moving. Lions haven't stopped them all second half. Like, why are you thinking we're going to punt the ball away and then try to have our defense win the game? Like, were you watching this game? Like, so that's you had to have the ball last to win this game.
Yeah.
So I was fine with going for it. And then they do that play action that, you know, the Vikings totally sniff out and Goff gets sacked, but she's got to just throw the ball. It's 4th down.
Story of his life.
But, you know, everyone's like, oh, but, you know, why in the world would they put it in Goff's hand for it? I'm like, okay, but if you do a fullback dive and it gets stopped, then everyone's screaming about how it's unoriginal play calling, right? Like, they thought...
Well, when you're the Lions and something doesn't work,
yeah,
you're always going to be blamed for doing the thing that you didn't do.
And that's the thing, is when your offense is bad and you have bad players, then none of your options are good. Because your options are either, like, we'll put it in the hands of this bad quarterback, or we'll try and, like, get our... offensive line to, like, move them on 4th down. We'll see what happens. Like, it's just they thought the Vikings were going to sell out for the, you know, the full fullback dive and thought they could catch him, and the Vikings called their bluff, and it is the way it goes. But it worked because they let the Vikings score with enough time to then drive down and win the game. So that was actually very well managed, in my opinion. And...
That's a lot of foresight.
And I mean, it is. I have been the let them score guy for years. You can ask people who knew me in group chats years ago.
When you give me their numbers.
When I would always say if a team was up one score, you know, 3 points with 3 or 4 minutes to go and the opponent got the ball, I just said, let them score. Just let them run, put it in the end zone, just let them walk 80 yards to touchdown. Let's get the ball back. Like, this is, and every year since then, more and more people are believing in that because this is modern football. Your DBs are not allowed to play defense.
Yeah.
How many times do teams slam the door with their defense and win games, especially in the NFL?
Whenever your team is wanting to score, that happens.
But, like, it's all about who has the ball last nowadays. And in the NFL, where so many games come down to the final play, I want my offense on the field. And especially if my defense is getting shredded the entire second half. Like,
it depends on the team, though, right? Like, if you have Tom Brady, then obviously. But if you have Jared Goff...
You had Jared Goff, and I still wanted that because I was watching the way the defense was playing. Like, all right. It's... So I didn't have much faith that he was going to lead us down the field for a game-winning touchdown, but I had more faith in that than I did in the defense stopping the Vikings. So,
well, that says a bit about what you've been through as a Lions fan this year.
I mean, it's a Lions experience. If you punt the ball in that situation, they're going to drive and win the game. It's just how it works. Yeah. So, you know, he proved some people wrong on that drive and made a lot of really nice plays, but then the Vikings, I mean... Amon-Ra St. Brown really makes two great plays in those final three because he plays DB and bats away an interception.
Yeah.
And then two plays later, and I don't know what the Vikings were doing, they gave him so much cushion, because he just runs out, sees the cushion, sits down, and then the ball's right
in
there.
The end zone.
Yep.
The guy's worried he's going to try to catch a pass in row three.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, but so it was pretty cool. That's what I'll say.
Well, I'm happy for you, because back at our Slacks, and I tried to Slack you most weeks when I thought maybe they have a chance, and then they always blow it, and I'm like, wow, he probably thinks I'm a total tool because I'm just setting him up and trying to troll him, when I'm actually, like, rooting for the Lions, because since hearing your stories about what you've been through, not that being a Jets fan is all that much better. They've had a few years where they've made the AFC title game, but on a year-to-year basis, it hasn't been that different, especially in the last 10 years. So I can understand what you're going through to a large extent. However, you know, I don't know if you want how many games you want them to win. I mean, you want the first pick.
It's at this point, it would take a lot for them to not have a top three pick, because...
So do you want one number one, or do you not care?
If you're one or two, you get either Thibodeau or Hutchinson.
Do you have a preference?
I'm not a draft scout. So
that's a lie. You're an everything scout. Everything you said to me that you're not in the last, like, what, 4 months or 5 months of working for MGO Blog, you've become that. So you have to make
I haven't watched Kayvon Thibodeau much, so I don't really know.
I have.
But
he's pretty good.
Either way, I think you're getting a really good player. And so I'm fine with that. And the thing is, you look at their schedule. I mean, that's why last week I was talking to my uncle, and we were both kind of like, there's not many chances left to get a win this season.
And you didn't want to go 0-16, especially since everyone else has two wins.
What about 0-16-1? That's different.
Stupid NFL.
But
yeah,
because you've got at Seahawks, and the Seahawks are bad, but you're not winning in Seattle. This is the Lions. at Falcons, probably not winning in Atlanta.
No,
and
Atlanta's the Falcons
at least
aren't
decent.
Bad. Yeah.
Green Bay at home, not winning that game. Cardinals at home, not winning that game. So, like, the Vikings, they were kind of like the hope to maybe get a win. And so you also got a little lucky in that their defense was mostly hurt. So stars aligned, but I would be shocked if they win more than one game the rest of the season. So
the number one pick is safe?
Or, well, if they win one more and either Jags or Texans lose out, then they would be two. But Jags and Texans play each other, so at least one of those teams will get one more win. So, and I don't really think the Lions will get another win. But, you know, what I've said about this staff is that, like, in the last few weeks, they've really been Scott Frost-like, in that...
They've done what they can do and get really unlucky and everyone hates them.
Well, when you keep getting unlucky, sometimes it kind of becomes who you are, and that's kind of was the concern before this week.
Ask Jim Harbaugh.
Because... you know, with this staff and everything, I mean, my point is, like, they're in games they have no reason to be in because of the staff. Like, they're in these games, and they've, you know, players are playing pretty well. Everyone's been hurt. They had the worst roster before everyone got hurt. And then...
it didn't improve when everyone got hurt.
I mean, it's just a terrible lineup, and they are consistently, like, down to the wire with Steelers and the Browns and the Vikings and all these, like, 500 teams.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way guys are developing and the way the team's playing. Like, you know, Campbell needs to give up the play calling duties. I maintain
Does
that.
Does he still have them?
Yes.
And there's probably not a lot of head coaches that do that unless you're like some Cliff Kingsbury guru, is there?
I think some do. It's
maybe
weird,
like,
wasn't an X's and O's guy.
That is kind of weird.
Which, I mean, what you should really do is, in the offseason, hire Joe Brady now that he's a free agent.
Maybe Michigan will hire him to replace Josh Gattis when he goes to coach Duke. Or they'll promote Mike Hart. Ooh.
Jay Harbaugh.
I mean, you don't... this is... this is a different podcast. We can do that in the offseason, which hopefully won't be for a few weeks, months.
Well, it can't anyway. Be for a few weeks, so...
That's true. We should probably talk about some hockey because people tuned in to listen to the Lions podcast. Wait till they get to the end. All right, so this was a weird series. So I only saw the Friday game. I was at Yost for the Friday game. Obviously, I was not there Saturday. I went back and rewatched it yesterday.
You watched it. Can't be a rewatch if you didn't see it the first time.
We already had this discussion.
Okay. Anyway.
I tried to convince you that they had it on the Jumbotron, and you believed me. Did you actually believe me? No, you didn't believe me, Alex. Okay. So, I watched the Saturday game, and, you know, we should get to this more in segment two, but it wasn't, like, inverse images of each other, but, like, I think I said to Craig, I was like, this is really disappointing, because these are two of the best teams in the nation, and have, I think there's like 29 draft picks that were like on these rosters. And the hockey combined wasn't very good. It was one team destroying the other one, and then the next night, the opposite team destroying the first team. So you really didn't see like a good hockey game. You just saw like two blowouts that went in different directions. And actually, that's, you know, spoiler alert, as we're apparently doing section two first, even though we're not, is that like all the Big Ten teams split, so through all of that, literally nothing changed
nothing
in the weekend,
changed.
Which is very...
Which, I mean, isn't the worst scenario when you're playing who's supposed to be the number two team, right? Like,
sure, and...
opportunity to bank wins is the other weeks.
It's disappointing that it was at Yost, and Michigan keeps playing all their games against teams at Yost, and now they're going to have to go on the road and win these games.
I mean,
they
were better on the road last year than at Yost, so...
That's probably true. So we'll start the first game. The first period was not enjoyable. It started okay. I thought Hughes made a really nice off-puck deflection that saved a goal pretty early, and then he created a chance for Pasta, and Brisson had a close chance. I mean, they had a couple chances early, and then it kind of started going south because the odd man rushes started pouring in, including, I believe, three in about 50 seconds. There was a 3-on-2, then a breakaway, then a 2-on-1, and Minnesota finally scores on the 2-on-1. You said that Truscott had a poor pass in the neutral zone on that
one.
No,
he had a bad read.
A bad read?
They are breaking out, and he tries to cut the play off, and... Nope.
Gets out of position.
I mean, he lets the play get past him. And it goes from a 2-on-2 to 2-on-1. He makes a do-or-die play to cut the possession off and doesn't. And it was not a terribly high percentage chance that was going to work.
Also, you know, I don't know how aware a lot of these players are, and maybe they have different views and the coaching staff teaches it differently. It just seems like to people like you and me, who probably fit people into too small of boxes, but if Hughes takes that chance, you're kind of like, okay, you're Luke Hughes. If Truscott takes that chance, like, you're supposed to be the grown-up in this pairing. You're supposed to be the defensive one in this pairing,
well,
right? I mean, is that too generic?
My new hashtag is hashtag justice for Keaton Pearson, because...
How often do you come with new hashtags? Is this like a thing?
It's replacing the old hashtag justice for Pep, because that one is now irrelevant now that Josh Gattis is good. But,
So it always is justice for someone. Is this you're like trying to stand up for the short guy?
Keaton Pearson, he should be playing over Truscott right now.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Truscott has not been good for a while, and he's not.
Now, do you think he should be in that pairing or just dressed instead of him?
Who's the better like stay-at-home guy to plug in there? I don't really have one, but I mean, Truscott doesn't give you a lot of offense, and it's just week after week, way, way, way too many problems. Like, mental just giveaways and bad decisions. And with Pearson, at least you know he would be in the right place on that play.
Until the puck got there.
Yeah, but Truscott gets caved in. I mean, I think they need to shake that pair up, frankly. Something needs to change.
So
defensively.
If that happens...
Not
What do you you know, they tried this earlier in the season, and I tried to go with it, but I was not sold. So, like, you mentioned the 2001 Avs, where they basically played Blake, Bork, and Foote, like, as many minutes as their legs could possibly handle in the playoffs and fit their other three defensemen around them. Do you think that this is a situation where you play, like, Blankenberg, Power, and Hughes on all different pairings?
No, because Hughes isn't a good enough two-way player to make that.
Okay, but but if Truscott is doing this, then you have to pair him with someone. I mean, you can't play by himself.
You should roll Power and Blankenberg for 27 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that's what I would do. I don't know. We don't have ice time numbers in college, unfortunately.
No, but Michigan rotates there.
They will rotate them more than I would want to. But
yeah.
Also, this is early in the season. This is, you know, I'm talking more about March.
Sure.
But, no, Hughes isn't, like, he can carry any pair offensively, but he's not sort of that kind of player, right?
Yeah.
Like, Bork and
Foote and Blake
and
were all
Foote
good
and Blake
defensive.
Were all two-way players.
Yeah, and I'm not
well,
trying to compare.
Foote wasn't
like,
even much of an offensive player. He was just a guy that when he was out there, you knew nothing was going to happen defensively.
Right. And I'm not trying to compare him to like three Hall of Famers, but like it's the idea of having three of the best players at a position, not necessarily.
I'm definitely in favor of your best players playing more. I'm definitely in that camp from a hockey perspective, but. Hughes, you just need to find the right pairing there. And I just don't think defensively right now that's the right pairing.
Because of Truscott.
Yeah.
Because Hughes is going to be Hughes.
Hughes is going to be Hughes. But, like, Truscott just makes too many errors and too many, like, things, especially off the puck, positioning.
And so
you
want to roll with Pearson again.
Especially because, I mean, we talked about this in the second game. I mean, Truscott had a mind-numbing turnover to create a goal in that game. Like, Pearson can do that too. And he at least will be a lot better off the puck.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen him in a while, but you're probably right. So it's 1-0, and it's kind of a bummer, and then right away, now this is where the Minnesota freshmen kind of have their moment, and Matthew Nyes gets to the net after just kind of whipping Hughes, going right by him, which will happen from time to time, as we've noticed, in the defensive zone. He doesn't get a goal because Truscott, I think, comes over and kind of gets the puck, but it not completely gets the puck, and it gets to Lucius, who just follows up and just finishes, because he's probably the best finisher on the Gophers team?
Probably. I mean, he's probably got the best released, yeah. I mean, that second goal, it's really all about Matthew Nyes, because...
Well, he creates it, yes.
He undresses Quinn Hughes, and... I mean, Nyes is an interesting prospect because he was a guy that slid to the second round, and a lot of people felt he shouldn't have fallen down the board. And Nyes, I mean, he is a really, really good player. I'm a big fan of his, and his hands were on display the whole weekend.
Yeah,
he's big; he can play around the net, but also, I mean, the way he just goes right through Hughes. I mean, that's talent on talent, and that's not Hughes doing something like really bad. It's just. Got Datsuk deked, right? Like, that happens sometimes.
I mean,
it's if he's getting deked like that by, like, a 25-year-old stiff, that's one thing. But this is a guy who should have been a first-round pick. Like,
so
it is what it is. But then after it happens, Truscott, he has to come over to help clean it up. And in that case, it's just kind of bad luck. He gets a stick in the way, but he doesn't totally shut it off because the puck goes right to Chaz Lucius. And
yeah.
It's in the back of the net, so...
So the next note that I have written down after it's 2-0 Minnesota is odd man rush number 4, and we're like halfway through the first period. And this is like, I think I wrote about this a little bit where, you know, you had some thoughts on this and we can talk about it for a second. This might be a good chance, but like you can have good in zone defense as much as you want, but Minnesota had 8 odd man rushes. I think it was 4 or 5 in the first period, but they had 8 in total, and some came later when Michigan was pressing, and okay, you know, that's going to happen. But you just can't give a team that many, like, open charges to the net, despite, like, the combo of goalies that played in this game saved 7 of them. I mean, they literally saved. It wasn't like, you know, Minnesota threw them away. They got saves on them, but you can't give them that many chances.
So what happened in this game is basically just masterclass defense from Minnesota, as particularly on entries, because Minnesota just completely shuts off Michigan's ability to enter with possession in this game in particular. And they were able to do it basically off the backs of their two defensemen, because Michigan would try to enter three forwards against two defensemen. Puck would be turned over right at the blue line, and the three forwards didn't even have to back check. And so as soon as a turnover happens, just boom, right up ice, and it's a 3-on-2, or it's a 2-on-1. And that was happening over, I mean, Faber, Lacombe, Brinkman, Staudiger, all those guys are all draft guys, all second, first, third round type guys. We've kind of been questioning what was up with that, you know, when they were giving up some goals, and obviously they gave up goals the next night.
Yeah.
But from just an execution standpoint, it was probably the best defensive period I've seen all season from an best defensive game. And, I mean, just watched the way I said that we should be counting their poke checks at one point.
Because, yeah, he did.
I mean, just look at how many times they poke check Michigan off the puck. I mean, Michigan tried in his own, boom, stick right there, turnover, chance the other way. And that happened over and over. And, I mean, eventually Michigan's trying to dump it in. Goalie comes out or a defenseman gets it up, boom, it's a chance the other way. And
so you said Michigan's rushing three guys up and there are two defensemen at the blue line. I mean, I'm not the best math guy in the world, but it seems like if you have three guys and your opponent has two, you should be able to enter the zone?
You should. I'd have to go back and really break them down and that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure.
Look at the two things differently. Yeah, but the thing is, right, if you're coming in and there's a guy in the middle and you're trying to pass to him, the defenseman sticks his stick out, or, you know, the defenseman steps up before you think he's going to and thumps you, all those sorts of things can kind of get in the way, right? Like it.
So friend of the pod, Peter, you know, the scout sure. In the box, said he's like, Michigan is just not built to be a dump and chase team.
No.
And
because of their size.
But they but they needed to be this game.
In this game, yes.
And they couldn't be, and that cost them?
I would wager that way, yeah.
Okay. So, many odd man rushes. It's still only 2-0. You're kind of feeling like maybe, you know, things go the other way. We've seen them come back before. And then they just have an in-zone defensive breakdown. It seemed like it was a team breakdown, and you had Lucius and Lacombe connected, and I think it was Lucius that scored his second goal of the night right at the end of the first period. It's 3-0 at that point. And, I mean, that's the second touchdown against Iowa, right? Like, that's,
yeah.
I mean,
that the game was over.
It could happen, but
yeah, I mean,
based on what?
So you have a failed clear on that play, which is always, whenever you see a failed clear, you're always in the back of your head like, oh,
could have been out.
Couldn't get it out. And then, I mean, again, this game really showed off that there isn't a major difference between a first-round pick and a second-round pick from an NCAA standpoint, in that Michigan has all these lottery picks and stuff.
Yeah.
But a guy in the second round, if they're a good player, they can match you talent for talent. You know, maybe not in one area or another.
But, well, it's drafting guys from like 17,
yeah,
18.
Well, and so, I mean, Bortolo again gets undressed by Jackson Lacombe. So that's the second of three goals in this period that come because they outskilled you, basically. Mm. Now, Michigan is kind of thinking we're the only team that has guys that can just undress a defender, right? Like, Minnesota has those guys, too.
Yep.
And we're picked as high, but a player that's picked in the second round like Jackson Lacombe is, they can do that stuff.
Yep.
And so Bortolo gets undressed. Edwards and Garrett Van Wy, neither of them step up to cut off the through pass. And then Steve Holtz in front of the net isn't clearing Matthew Nyes out of the front of the net, and he's a big guy.
And if Steve Holtz is doing anything on the ice in his own zone, it's got to be like knocking somebody down, right?
Yeah. So it's just kind of a whole situation there.
So we start the second period, and they get their first chance from the house at like the 16-minute mark. And because I got the stat sheets at the end of the first period, and Michigan did not have an attempt from the house. So not only are they giving up these chances, odd man rushes, and having in-zone defensive breakdowns, but they're not getting anything offensively, even when they do get the puck in the zone, which wasn't a ton. They could not even get to a remotely dangerous area. And I wrote down the 16-minute mark there, their first chance. I think Beniers shot it wide. They get a power play after that, and you're thinking, okay, maybe. And it just, like you mentioned how much scouting the Gophers did, and it just seemed to come true because anything Michigan wanted to do on the power play, which I think if you've listened to this hockey cast before, you know pretty much what they want to do, was shooting through a defender and then the goalie and everyone anticipating it when the shot was coming.
Well, they made sure to cut off the cross-seam pass, and then they also made sure to cut off the pass from below the goal line to the slot. And those were the two major scouting things they did. It would be sometime when I'm not doing football recruiting to do like a neck sharpies type thing of, right? Like, I mean, they had the whole power play downloaded and all of the immediate moves that Michigan likes to do were being taken away. And so, you know, the story of this game is that a lot of things went wrong for Michigan. It wasn't their best from an effort level. They didn't get a great bounce on the fourth goal. But they also played a team that's got close to equivalent talent, maybe a little bit less, but close in terms of drafted guys on every line and on every pair, and highly drafted guys, not fifth and sixth rounders, second, third rounders, and a team that's well coached. It's got that talent and is well coached. And so,
that's what I was going to say.
There you go.
You have really good talent that is well coached, and when you have that, it's tough to beat. And Michigan sort of ran into that. They did get a goal that they thought it was going to be 3-1. Duke got a pretty good look, and JLF made the save, and he got it. But Duke was able to get it across the line, and then it was cleared out, and they reviewed it, and there was an offside. And I think Steve King on Twitter was like, "Oh no, well that's offside." And so when I saw him say that, I was like, "Well, because some people are like, I don't know, it's a bad call." And
I was watching that on TV, and I had never seen an angle. Like, I mean, I was watching it, and I was like, yeah, it's probably offsides. But there was no angle to me that was definitive because there was no usable angle, really. It was like one angle was like the play is in the top corner, like half cut off by the screen. And then the other angle, like you couldn't even see the puck. And so you're looking at it and squinting and like, I mean, it's probably offsides. But from a clear and indisputable standpoint, I did not really think that we had an angle that even... You could piece it together and say it was probably offsides, but the last time I checked, we were not piecing these together.
Well, it just depends what the ref is, right? Like, I mean, people do what they want anyway. And then right afterwards, McLaughlin forces a defensive zone turnover, gets the puck to the net, and poked it through Portillo. That was the rough bounce you were talking about. And then Michigan got another power play later on and late in the second, and they just got nothing again. And that's how Michigan has gotten back into games throughout the year. They couldn't do it. And then at the end of the second period, the defense just collapsed apart again. And it was, I wrote down, they have it, Minnesota scored from about 3 feet away. It was 5-0. And I mean, you barely played 40 minutes yet. I thought that Michigan probably would not get a sweep this weekend. I don't know that I would have like taken a split per se, but I did not think it would be 5-0 at the end of the second period of either game.
I mean, it was that play, you know, there was kind of a weird bounce on that goal, and then it's just the team is just totally rattled by this point, and sometimes when it rains, it pours, and that was the story of the next game.
That's true. Bortolo did get a goal to start the third. He had a nice redirect from Edwards, who had a shot at the point, and just kind of tipped it in. I thought that if... I wrote down more screens. Like, at this point, the game's over, more or less. But this is a situation where if you can't get to the house, then you got to get people in front of LaFontaine and hope that you get a bounce or draw a penalty or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but by the third period, it's just kind of like, let the clock run down, come back tomorrow.
I just wanted to see them have some fight. Like, you see these games where you have teams that blow people out in one game and then... sort of like in the playoffs that happens, and you don't want to see a team quit and lose two games in one game. And Michigan did fight a little bit. They actually outshot Minnesota, which was kind of funny in its own weird way in this game. But we did get to see Noah West come in, and he played in the third period. And his first save, someone kept commenting, was like, his first save was a breakaway. And I'm like, well, welcome to Michigan, buddy. Because And then he saved another 2-on-1, I think. And so, I don't know that you can really, like, extrapolate anything from this, but he did not look like a clown who was facing the wrong way. So, that's a positive, I guess.
I mean, take what you can get in a game like that.
Well, and, I mean, at some point, like, we've talked about maybe they play in one game against Niagara, but both of those games are kind of tight, so you can't really take him out right away. I thought maybe they could have started him, but they didn't. I assume Pearson was just like, look, I got to play Portillo or else the Sabres are going to literally kill me. And then, you know, they couldn't really play him because there was a blowout. And
tough thing about playing a team like Niagara is that even though you expect to win, there's such a huge disincentive to losing that game because of how it kills you in pairwise.
That's true.
You can't take any chances.
That's true. Do you remember? You said what that West had decent numbers last year, so it's not like they're putting in some throwaway walk-on who has no idea.
That's not the U of T backup goalie that the Leafs had to use as their potential backup a few months ago.
Right. So I thought he was fine. It would be nice to see him in the future get a game. He did come here, but it does not look like they're going to have a lot of great chances to give him a start. Maybe they'll get him in.
He knew that when he came here. So
also true. I think this is the end of segment one. We will move on and talk about a happier segment two.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
I pick my dues time after time. I've took my sentence but committed no crime, and bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my shares and drinks in my veins, but I've got blue. We are the champions, my friend, and we'll give our fight to the end. We are the champions, we are the champions. No time for losers, we are the champions of the world. I'm taking my bow. Fame and fortune and everything goes well then. I thank you all, but it's been a bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a touch before the honeymoon rest.
Did you have this game on when it was actually on?
Yeah. This game started at 7,
right? Yeah.
So I was in the shower for about the first 5 minutes.
Thanks for that update. How was your shower?
I had a bit of a cold over the weekend, so I was trying to clear my sinuses and such.
Do you feel better?
Hot seat. Yeah, the last few days I've been feeling better, which is good. So,
2 days.
Yeah, but anyway, and so then I got ready to have dinner and stuff. So I put it on, but wasn't watching super closely. And then I saw the last 10 minutes of the first period pretty coherently. And then I had it on until the game started, and then probably by 8:15, it was 5-1. So then I was like, okay, this is done. I can turn this off and not have two things distracting me.
That's fair. So the first note is that no KJ.
He was sick, apparently.
Yeah, that's what the announcers, I think, said.
Yep.
And this was a game where you're like, all right, we just got run by Minnesota, and now we don't have one of our better players. I don't know where the line is with all these guys, but
I mean, this is definitely a game, you know, where you really felt like Michigan had to win it, just like as a preface coming in.
Well, at least from the point, I mean, well, I guess in the standings, because otherwise Minnesota's +4, and
yeah,
they host you, and I mean, they obviously there are games to play, but the other thing was just from a morale standpoint,
well, sure,
because they hadn't won it. They hadn't won a Big Ten game at Yost since was it the Michigan State game?
Yes.
Yeah, because they beat Niagara, but they lost both to Notre Dame.
Yep.
And I think this would have been, so they lost 3 in a row.
Yeah.
Coming in. And so no KJ, and you're just like, man, this could be bad. And then you send me a text, and we'll go back and talk about this, but you send me a text at the end of the first period, and you're like, oh, it's 3-1 Michigan. And I turned to Craig, I was like, guess the score. And he's like, I don't know, 4-0 Minnesota. And I was 3-1 Michigan. He's like, what? And I was like, yeah, I have no idea. But so, I did go back and watch, not rewatch, but watch this game last night to kind of get some notes and get a feel for it. And the weird thing was about it is the goal scorers in this game were, I don't think a drafted player scored a goal. And I'm going to guess that all of the players are either overagers or are now overagers in their fifth or sixth year.
I'm trying to think of who scored the sixth goal, but
Moyle,
yeah.
So he's a senior.
Yeah. Karenin is a sophomore, but
oh, that's true.
Old.
But he was a guy.
Yeah, Stop is a freshman, but
he's... But he's 20, isn't he?
Yes.
19, 20.
I mean, he's a single overager.
And then Pasta had the hat trick, which the third one was...
He's 37.
In soccer, it wouldn't have counted. It would have been an own goal.
That's a terrible thing. That's one of the worst parts of soccer.
Is that they don't award goals to people who shoot them.
Yeah.
So I kind of like it in a way, because they...
I mean, I get soccer is less random than hockey, but the fact that your name has to go on the sheet for an own goal, if it just goes off of you randomly, is so stupid. An own goal is when you directly put it in your own net. You're clearing it and you put it in the net.
Well, that happens.
Yes, that's an own goal. If it bounces off of you and goes in, that's not an own goal.
Sure. Yes. So, again, this game doesn't start the best either, as Michigan does get some chances early, but... And actually, that was weird, because the first...
Now, Michigan was a better team through the whole first period.
Sure.
They just give up the first goal.
Well, that's what I mean by the starting. They did get a couple of chances, and honestly, on the first couple of looks that LaFontaine saw, I thought he already wasn't as sharp. He left a rebound out in the slot, and then he lost a puck
behind
him.
Michigan was able to enter with possession easier, too. They were playing off the rush more.
So it's almost like the Notre Dame series, where Friday, Michigan does have the lead, but Notre Dame is just locking them down. And then Saturday, Notre Dame does not play near to their capability, and Michigan actually gets chances.
Yeah.
And Bischel has the kind of fluffy night, except that Portillo has a worse night, and that goes that way. But in this case, Michigan's playing all right, and then Hughes makes a weird attempt to make a stop on what was going to be the first goal. He kind of comes shooting up, and the guy just skates right around him, and Garavan Y is not checking Brodzinski on the back door, and so he hits sort of the cross slot pass, and it's an open net goal, and it's 1-0. And I mean, I wasn't watching it this time. You were probably still in the shower, or you were
No, I was watching it.
And were you oh no.
It was kind of a here we go again thing.
Yeah.
I've just been disappointed the last month with Garavan Y's defensive play. And
which is why he's playing, by the way.
The second straight night that he's just standing around watching the puck while, I mean, you know, a pass goes right by him to an exposed dude with an empty net. Like, come on.
Do you think he's scared that if he plays defense, he'll get ejected for hit to the head?
Possibly.
Because that's happened. Although one of those was probably legit. So it's 1-0, and then, like, Michigan starts getting better looks. I had Power walked into the house and got a pretty good shot. Minnesota then gets a power play, and you're like, this could go really poorly. And then Nyes, like, misses an open net. And by misses, I mean Nick Blankenberg sticks his stick out and
great.
Knocks the puck out of the air. Is that skill or is that luck? That's some luck, right? To some extent.
I mean, he had his stick in the right position and just got a piece.
Yeah. Which is sort of like what you do when how you train defensive linemen, right? If you can't get to the quarterback, you put your hands up. And if you can't get to the puck, you put your stick out.
Yeah, basically.
And then after that, it was the Gophers didn't have much. So maybe that was what changed it, because it was going to be 2-0, and Blankenberg made the play of the day defensively. And then we get Marcus Stoppa's first goal, which is created by, I believe, a Bortolo faceoff win, and then Brisson gets the puck to the net, and Estapa does this sort of skate to stick backhand behind him shot that beats LaFontaine, and it's 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, it's a faceoff win. Brisson shoots, and Estapa heads the net, which is why he's on the team, and you know, Michigan catches Minnesota watching the puck. Lacombe lets Estapa right by him and isn't really involved, and Estapa's right there for the nice little finish.
So he's been good.
I like him.
I liked him early when they played him.
But he has the touch of skill, which I like.
And he's big. And we talk about what does this team need? Sometimes guys to win pucks in the corners. Sometimes guys to make checks and to not get pushed over because they have too many players that at times will be pushed around. Marcus Stopp is not one of those guys. So you having him on the ice, having Beecher on the ice, all of a sudden now you have a couple different lines that have a guy who can go toe-to-toe with most guys size-wise. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 1-1, and as I'm taking my notes, I did not pause it because I didn't look at when all the goals were scored, and it became 2-1 as Steve Holtz had his shot from the left point. That was another rebound by LaFontaine, which we'd already noted had happened a few times already, and Mike Pasta gets a dunk. It's 2-1.
Well, Michigan, on that play, entered the zone because of Portillo playing the puck. Minnesota dumps it in, Portillo comes out, rims it against the boards. Michigan's now got, you know, enough space going the other way that they can enter cleanly, and then not long after that, the point shot happens, and you get the rebound.
2-1, and then right before the end of the period, I thought this was Morgan, and I almost fell out of my chair, but on rewatch it was actually Beniers, but Beniers recovers the puck, is skating away from the net up the right boards, and just has this insane cross-ice pass to Mike Pasta, who catches it right on his tape and just buries a shot inside the outside post, and it's 3-1. Low glove, I guess, is what they called it.
Yeah, that's a goal that Michigan hasn't scored a lot of because it's a dump in, puck in the corner, and Morgan gets involved physically and feathers it along, but the player beside him, because he was 1-on-2 there, is the closer 1-2. It Beniers slinks up and asserts himself physically and takes a hit from behind and sort of wards off the body behind him, and he must have, when he skates in to engaged there, have seen in his peripheral vision Posajov coming that direction on the far side.
Right, the opposite direction.
Yeah, because as soon as he touches it, he knows exactly where he's going with it. And then also a really nice toe drag to get that shooting lane and deke the defender. So,
and that's nice for Pasta because he came back and we were kind of excited because he was a guy who scored a few goals last year, fit in well on definitely the B&B line, and on other lines he can kill penalties and do stuff. And he just hasn't really done a whole lot this year. They've moved him around, and he's had different line mates, so to speak. But last night I think was good for him, getting a few goals in a game that Michigan needed to have when their top players or their highly drafted players really didn't do much all weekend. I mean, Beniers had this pass, but I'm talking from a goal-scoring perspective. And Mike Pasta scored 3 goals, as we've talked about 2 of them. He'll get one more, but kind of like there's guys that when you talked about in the Niagara series, I was like, if you could pick someone to have like a jumpstart game, I think Beecher's on that list. It would be really nice to get him going. And Pasta's probably not far down that list either.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely good for him.
All right. So we move along to the second period. Moyle was back playing as he did not play the previous night. He forced a nice defensive zone turnover and LaFontaine bailed out Minnesota. I was excited for Moyle in that. Those are the types of things that he's on the ice for, so a little bit of forechecking, kind of being a menace, and like an older version of Duke in that way, and creating a chance. Doesn't get a goal, but it was a good move for him, and it's nice to see. He's missed a few games for unspecified reasons, I guess. I'm not really sure why. He's been scratched a few times, but seeing him make a play is a good thing. And then after that, we talked about Pasta getting his third goal. It comes on actually a Minnesota power play, so he gets a shorthanded goal after Morgan goes off for boarding. Not sure about that call after on the replay, but Portillo makes a two back-to-back saves. Both of them were really good looks. Edwards then follows that up with another nice save where he gets down on, I believe, is almost all fours and kind of gets a stick on the ice, keeping like the ice clean, and punches the puck out. Because that was open backdoor after Portillo's couple saves. Pasta ended up making a poke check at the blue line and carrying in, and then gets a friendly bounce off of Faber's skate. This is what we were talking about with the
goal. He also undresses Brinkman on that play, a really nice move, and then it bounces in, and I don't know what they... Why they were reviewing that for so long?
Somebody said it went off of Beniers's like hand.
So they were talking about a kicking motion, was what the broadcasters were saying. But one look at the replay, and it was like it didn't even touch Beniers.
So
I don't really understand why they were in the box for like a minute.
It looked like it. So from one angle, because you don't see the level and the plane that the puck is on, it looks like it hits Beniers' like hand.
Yep.
But it doesn't, because when you look at it from the other angle, it's like on a completely different plane, inches below his hand, where it does not come close. I think it hits Faber's skate, is what I had written down based on the angle that I saw. And at that point, it's 4-1. And now we're kind of to the point where I never want to say never with this team sometimes, but we're getting to the point where it's over.
Yeah. And especially, when they then score the fifth goal now.
And part of it was like they just skated better, I thought. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's teams have energy, and sometimes you're in the groove and other times you're not.
I thought Edwards had a decent game that game, too. You've mentioned early on, I kind of like his upside. Like, we talked about who needs to be on Michigan's third pairing or if they dress a seventh defenseman. The Karanen thing I get because he kind of plays forward and defenseman, and you can move him around as need be, but Edwards, you said, is sort of Hughes light in the sense that he does have some offensive upside.
Yeah, I mean, I like Edwards a lot. I think he needs to play more. You just have to find the right partner for him because he's going to have some of those same caveats.
So he was paired with Holtz this weekend. Does that make sense to you because Holtz should be primarily a defensive guy?
From a schematic standpoint, it makes sense. I'm just not a big Steve Holtz fan, so...
Should we not tell Brian?
I mean, it's a third pair. If you're playing them legitimate third pair minutes, it doesn't really matter.
I mean, we don't have a whole lot more to talk about in this game, so maybe we can get into this a little bit. So, all right, I don't know how, diplomatic we need to be about some of these things, but, is there anything else you need to see from Jack Summers? Or has that ship sailed for you?
I'd be okay with Summers in over Holtz. I mean,
would you?
I don't know. I think they need to stop blending the forwards as much, and I think they need to tinker with the defensemen a little more.
Well, we talked
about their forward lines. Every week, it's a line blenders going.
It is kind of,
and
especially after 3 or 4 weeks where it wasn't.
Yeah, and now I don't understand why they just keep changing the lines each week.
I mean, some could be guys. Like certain guys being sick or unavailable.
Yeah, I mean, if you have guys out of the lineup and stuff, but they just bounce them around all the time.
And we haven't seen Granowitz in a while.
No, and I would be fine to see him. But the forwards, they have a glut of forwards, so it's...
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. The defensemen...
I mean, they have 7 or 8 defensemen now if you count Karanen and Holtz. So two of those guys, well, one of those guys for sure isn't going to play. The other one can play, which I don't mind.
My preferred lineup would probably be Hughes and Heaton Pearson, and then Edwards and Triscott.
As the third pair?
Yes.
So Pearson essentially as the sixth defenseman, the way that we've sort of been counting it.
But playing more minutes than Triscott, because Triscott gets demoted to the third pair roles.
Okay, and then do you dress seven? Or would you dress a 13th forward?
I would dress a 7th as Foltz, potentially, as a penalty killer.
As a penalty killer?
Yeah.
You think he's been good on the PK?
Well, it's just a guy that you could use there, because then you could go your top pair and then Keaton Pearson and then Foltz as your penalty killers.
Okay.
I don't want Triscott on the penalty kill, no. Frankly.
And not Hughes?
Not Hughes, no.
Okay. No, I mean, that's definitely interesting.
I know Mel likes Karanen, and it's cool that you can have a defenseman and a forward, but they've got so many better forwards, and just don't really think the utility and defense is that great. Like, I don't know.
Speaking of Karanen as a forward, he ends up getting a tip goal next in our chronology of this game. Holtz, again, so Holtz gets two assists on shots from the point, which is probably good. It's what he should be doing, because that's what
there's value to putting pucks on the net.
And Karanen is in the right spot, gets a nice little tip, angles it down off the ice and in, and it's 5-1, and now it's over. I mean, now the game is over from that point. I thought the other thing that I wrote down next is that Portillo was pretty good in this game. I mean, I didn't think he was bad on Friday, and they pulled him for Noah West, which I believe that Mel was asked that after the game, and he said no, this, or before the game on Saturday, one of those two, and he said that this was a team pull. This was not a, we got to get Portillo out of there. This was a, we're not doing it for him, so we're going to bring him back.
If you know the story behind Patrick Waugh, if you have a lead goalie who gives up 4 or 5 goals in a game, doesn't matter if they're on him or not, if you're not in the game and it's like that, you have to take him out. You have to, just for the mental and psychological side of it.
And especially if they're not on him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they're on him and you're like, all right, dude, work through this, that's different. But if they're not on him and you're just hanging him out to dry and he keeps giving him up, I mean, I've played enough indoor soccer goalie where your defense is just not there. And you're like, all right, I'm getting tired of standing here and trying to face breakaways, guys. So either do something else or you can find another goalie for the next 15 minutes. But I thought he was pretty good on Saturday. He made a number of nice little saves, especially a couple on the penalty kill, when they were on the penalty kill. Pad saves, glove saves. He had that one rough game against Notre Dame, but other than that, it's hard to find a whole lot wrong with him.
I mean, they've now played like 16 games or whatever. If you have one bad one in 16, that's fine.
Yep. Holtz walked in and rang the post. We're still in the second period, and you know, that would have been kind of cool to see him get one, especially with his night, with his assists. Didn't happen, but he was effective, I guess, offensively in at least on the score sheet. And we already kind of talked about this. You know, I led sort of with it, but I wrote it down here. Just like, it was just a bummer that you got two blowouts, right? Like, these are the teams that you want to see play against each other in a two-game series. You could potentially have two really good games, and you just ended up getting, you know, a 5-1 game, and then essentially a 5-1 game here, where Michigan does score at the end of this period. This was sort of the kicking motion that you were referencing earlier, where Nolan Moyle scores with his knee, and he does kind of have a kicking motion, but he doesn't hit it with his skate. So can you, like, punt a puck into the net if it hits your shin?
I would have to look at the rule for that.
Have you ever seen that?
Not really.
Not really, no. I mean, pucks go off shins all the time, but having one go off... Did you see the kicking motion on this one, though?
Yeah, I mean, not a major one.
But the kicking motion only applies to the skate, supposedly. Because that's what they say. He's like, well, it didn't hit his skate.
Yeah, I'd have to go actually and look through the rule book to figure out what it says about the kicking motion.
The other thing that makes this a mirror image of the first game, or an inverse image, I guess I should say, is that Minnesota pulled Jack LaFontaine.
Which, again, Justin Close comes in. Yeah, you have to do in that situation.
It was also his first loss, I think, to Michigan at Yost. I think he was like 4-0-1, I believe.
I can believe that.
And he'd only given up like 3 goals, I think.
Yeah.
And so It was nice to beat him once.
I mean, reversion.
Yeah, well, there you go. Minnesota scored in the third period to make it 6-2. We referenced the Moyle goal. That was the sixth goal. That was
just a bad Triscott turnover that then spirals and a good bounce off the end boards for Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really have anything else about the third period. So we can move on to tidying up the rest and getting to Ohio State. Penn State and Michigan State split, and my comment is, all right.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, neither of these teams are going to factor into the conference race.
Probably not.
They could beat Michigan or Minnesota at some point. But
we're still a month early, but the Big Ten's doing pretty good in pairwise. So that's
as a whole?
Yes.
This is a little more interesting. Notre Dame and Ohio State split. I don't know if that's the preferred outcome for Michigan. It could be. It depends.
I think it is, yes.
Would you have wanted a sweep for either team?
No.
You just want them both down?
Yes, I will want them to lose to Penn State, Michigan State, or Wisconsin, and then split with each other.
So, well, okay, sure. Notre Dame wins 5-1, and then Ohio State wins 4-2. In the Ohio State win, Goliath's in net, and Ohio State gets about 4 in a row after going down 1-0. Notre Dame had better Corsi at even strength. And close, but Ohio State gets the power play goals.
Ohio State's not a big puck possession team, just like if we're moving into the preview part. Like, they've been outchanced by the big dogs when they've played them.
Yeah. Well, we watched them play last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they got a lot of new forwards this year that are needle moving, I guess.
They have a lot of guys that are contributing. Now we're basically doing Ohio State preview.
Okay.
They don't have a guy. They have a remarkable distribution of everybody chipping in.
Yeah, their highest goal score is like 5.
Let me pull up their numbers right now. I put in my piece last week. Yeah, their leading goal scorer has 5. Yeah. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 guys with 2 or more goals.
But so 14 they're all guys like 2 to 4.
2 to 5, yep. 14 guys with between 2 and 5 goals. It's a remarkable amount of just everyone doing
goals.
A little bit.
Yeah.
That Georgi Markulov guy, by the way, now up to 4 goals on 13 shots for a 31% shooting percentage.
Okay, so that's like, I mean, do you remember?
Travis Treloar is at 22% shooting.
Do you remember Jonas Donskoy for the Avs last year was at one point shooting like in the low 40s? Like, and he had like, because he had a hat trick kind of early, and he ended up getting up to like 12 goals in not that many games, and he was shooting like an insane percentage, like better than what you'd want your power play to be. And it seems a little bit like that, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's for Merkulov, it's just really low shots, right? Like, it's just isn't shooting much, and a lot of them are going in, and that's going to...
I think that was Granowitz a couple of years ago.
...revert if he ever shoots more. So, I mean, otherwise, this is not a team with a ton of talent. It's... not a lot of drafted guys.
I think 3 drafted skaters, but none of them really high.
No. Dobish is one of them.
5th round.
Yeah, he's sitting at 2-1, 4 goals against, .924 save percentage. He's been really good, but he's also been pulled like twice.
So that was the thing I was going to say about the game where they lost 5-1, is he gave up 5 and got chased. So I don't know that those goals were on him per se, but 5 did get by him. It's not like he cannot be scored upon.
Yeah, he's given up 5 and gotten pulled twice. One against Notre Dame and one against Mercyhurst, which is kind of the story of Ohio State's season, is that they got some weird results. They have...
Well, they split all their series except against UConn, and they swept one other team. Was it
Penn State? They split with Mercyhurst, split with Notre Dame, split with Minnesota, split with MSU, and split with Bentley.
Bentley, yeah.
So
didn't they lose their first game of the year to Bentley, I think?
Yes. And by the way, their sweep of UConn included an overtime game, so functionally a tie. So this is a pretty mediocre team. They are 9-5, but with 1 overtime win, so 8-5-1. They split with most teams. They've lost to some bad teams. They have a habit of coming back in games and winning after falling down, especially 2 or 3-0 early on.
Yeah.
They have a goalie who can goalie you, and then also sometimes, you know.
So they're 17th in pairwise, which not sure how much that means yet. 18th in Corsi, which is...
Yeah, what I was mentioning earlier is that the Big Ten teams except Wisconsin, are all between like 4 and 22 in course and in pairwise.
Hmm. Their power play percentage is at like 18, which is probably average-ish.
It's probably a little
below, maybe. Yeah, I'd have to. And do you want to take a guess at what their penalty kill percentage is?
Well, I've seen your notes.
Oh, boo! 62%. Have you ever seen that?
That's a mismatch.
How do you have 62% on your penalty? I mean, because we're not like 2 weeks into the season where you're like, oh, they just gave up like 3 goals and 8 chances.
Let me look at their team.
I couldn't believe that. I was like, all right, I must be on the wrong line, and it was not.
10 goals on 26 attempts. Oof.
That seems like a lot.
And how many goals are they giving up total? 31. Yeah, I mean, that's how you get them.
Well, it's in Columbus, so you can never trust referees there, but this seems like a matchup that, I mean, I don't want to say Michigan should sweep this because I don't, like I said, I don't really trust any time Michigan goes to Columbus to play it, you know, just to have everything go their way, but it seems, you think they're at least going to get a split. I mean, that's what Ohio State does. And with this penalty kill percentage, as long as they get any sort of calls, they're going to score some goals.
A sweep would be very nice because you'd have beaten a decent team on the road for a sweep. You'd be firmly in first place in the conference going into the break.
And Ohio State's, I think, third.
Or fourth, yeah.
Depending on how you look at them in Notre Dame.
Yeah. So, a sweep would be very nice and it would give us a good feeling about the holiday season. Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 4.10 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week where there will be no football talk. No games, no football talk, just hockey.
Couldn't get in anywhere after you left and a place after like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So it was like 3:30 and we'd been sitting watching the basketball game forever and everybody wanted to walk around. So we started walking around and like Indy's kind of neat. Like there's like a Skyway mall things that you can like walk over streets as cars going by. So we checked that out. They have this big like monument in the middle of downtown in the Capitol. So there's like things to do. And then we got like, ran out of stuff to do. And so we're like, all right, should we go get like dinner or something? But we weren't really hungry. And so we walked down to this like fan fest thing that was like 2 or 3 blocks north of the stadium. And there's a band playing and there's like $17 beers.
A band or the
band? Yeah, no, there was like one band.
Okay.
But it was like a house band type situation. I mean, you could recognize some like, I think they played Pour Some Sugar on Me. And I was like, hey, we sang that in 2012 after we won the Sugar Bowl.
Def Leppard cover band.
And they had this ginormous screen that was showing the SEC championship game.
Okay.
So people were, like, crowding around it, and there's heaters and everything. And so we ended up down there for a while and watched most of the first half. So Georgia was up by 10, I think.
They were up 10-0 when Jamison Williams ripped off that, like, 85-yard touchdown.
Yeah. And then we left when it was 10-0, and a couple of my friends were, like, texting me scores as we were, like, milling around the city. And we came back, and we watched Bama go up and score right before half. So I saw a good chunk of the first half.
You must have
half.
Left like right after Georgia went up 10-0.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, because it was like the kickoff, and then like I think it was the first or second play from scrimmage for Bama after that.
Where he goes like 80 yards.
Yeah, because I went upstairs to get a drink, and then I came back down.
And he'd already scored?
Yeah, it was 10-7. I'm just like, what?
So my issue was, I know I was supposed to root for Georgia, and I was telling myself that. And then as I'm watching the game and Bama starts moving the ball, or I think they stopped him, and I was getting excited. And I had to, like, shut that down and be like, no, remember, you're rooting for Georgia. And, like, I couldn't compute it. So I texted my buddy outside Atlanta, and I'm not going to mention his name because he said he didn't want to broadcast this. But he's like,
uh-oh.
In this case, I think it's okay if Georgia wins. But I'm not telling anybody that. And I was like, yeah, I feel that way too.
Yeah, like, I think that there's an upside and downside. On the downside, obviously, Bama's now in the playoff. And
they're going to get the one, and we draw a really tough
Nick
matchup.
Saban is blah, 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 blah. You don't get to face Cincy, all that stuff. Although, like, once Bama made it close at halftime, you were like, Bama's getting in. Like, it doesn't matter if they win this game or they lose this game. They're getting in over Oklahoma State or Baylor or Notre Dame.
The problem is that it doesn't really come down to rankings then, right? Like, they were not going to have Georgia and Alabama play in the first round.
They claimed they were going to do that if they were comfortable.
Well, I said I own the Grand Canyon, but I didn't produce a deed, so it didn't work out so well. Right? But I mean, seriously,
I mean,
did you think there was a chance that Michigan was going to play Cincinnati and Georgia and Bama were going to play each other on New Year's Eve?
From the conventional standpoint, no. On the other hand, if you do that, you get Michigan in one matchup,
which is going to be ratings.
And then you get an all-SEC with two big-time schools,
which is probably ratings.
Yeah, so that is the counter-argument. But
no way. They want Alabama in the title game anyway.
Well, so my thing about that is that on the other hand, like, it did show that Georgia is not, like, a juggernaut, right?
I haven't been allowed to say that because, like, you're not allowed to have an opinion that differs from anyone else's in this world. So, but my thought was that, like, okay, yeah, their defense is awesome. Dude, they stuffed Arkansas. And I'm like, okay, you know, they shut down Georgia Tech. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, great. But who, I kept saying, because Craig was like, oh, you can't score on their defense. And I was like, who's their best win? And he still hasn't answered the question because it doesn't, there's no answer.
I put that in my playoff piece. I mean, Georgia ain't play nobody until they played Bama, right? Like, that's...
And then they gave up 40. I mean, Michigan had the number one defense in the country, and then they gave up 62.
Did you see my tweet that did numbers about that?
Not if it was in the last 2 days.
I tweeted, I haven't seen a supposedly great defense get ripped up like this since Don Brown was coaching at Michigan, and it got, like, 250 likes.
Yeah, and you also, like, cut yourself, but, like, whatever, I guess.
I mean, it's the same thing, right? Like, it was the exact same thing because you have this, okay, this is the great defensive front. They don't get any pressure the entire game.
Against Alabama?
Yeah, and their secondary gets ripped apart. But that's because they couldn't get it. And I did think, I have to go back and watch the tape, which I will because my job. But,
Wait, the Alabama-Georgia game?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, because you're going to FFM. Yeah, sure.
So, it seemed like Georgia started blitzing more in the second half. The first half, it seemed like they were kind of like, well, we've got this great defensive line, like the greatest defensive line in college history. We can rush four, and we'll create havoc the whole time. And then they didn't get a single pressure rushing four. And if you let the best quarterback in the country and this, like, unstoppable wide receiver...
Because that's who he is, right? Like, let's get this down. Like, Bryce Young is the best quarterback in the country.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he's better than Stroud.
Yes.
And he's a true freshman.
He's a true sophomore or a redshirt freshman.
No, he wasn't there last year, was he?
I think he's eligible for the 23 draft. Let me look.
Really? Well, anyway. Okay, he's super young, but he's the best player in the country. And if you don't get any pressure on him...
Yeah, he was there last year.
Okay. So he's Stroud's here.
Yeah, so he's the... Yeah. So basically, here's what needs to happen. Ready? Number one overall, Lions take Hutchinson or Thibodeau. Number 20.
So we haven't really talked. Has the last 2 weeks changed your opinion on that?
We'll talk about that later.
All right.
23 or 24, the Rams pick. You hope that Olave is there. And then...
is that who you want?
Then 2023, number one overall, Bryce Young. Boom. Rebuild done.
Rebuild done. Three players. I mean, is that who you want, Olave?
Well, they need a wide receiver badly, so it's just whoever is in, like, the mid-20s.
But there's, like,
is really good.
400 wide receivers in this draft.
Yeah, I know, but he's the one that I know that seems like he might be there. some mock drafts, it's like, oh, this guy from Arkansas. Okay, I don't know that guy. I haven't watched Arkansas.
He scored 0 points against Georgia, by the way, according to all these, like, Georgia lovers.
I mean, I'm the number one Kirby Smart truther out there.
Which is?
I don't think Kirby Smart's a good coach.
Well, he's probably a good defensive coach.
I think he is a doofus in a visor who lets the boosters pay all the recruits.
Well, the second part is probably true. The first part is he's knows what he's doing to some extent on defense.
I mean, look at his talent, though, and like what he's produced in his time at Georgia.
Like a bunch of draft picks?
He's got the most talent in the country outside of Bama and maybe Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, this team is built off of like five straight top three or top four classes. They've got an absurd amount of talent.
Okay, but
for this to be their second playoff appearance under him and like always just getting pantsed by Bama every time he plays them.
I mean, and that's the Michigan-Ohio State thing, though.
Yeah, but Michigan has a discernibly less amount of talent than Ohio State. Georgia is getting close. I mean, is within shouting distance.
Yeah, their problem is they're starting a walk-on quarterback.
Yeah, and after this, the second time that he's had a quarterback-related fiasco, when he kept Jake Fromm over Justin Fields.
So is he Jim Harbaugh?
But Jim Harbaugh, like, discernibly made improvements, like, right away as a coach, right? Like, with other guys recruit.
Okay, I mean, he made an improvement over Brady Young, which wasn't going to be a big jump. But, yes, I see your point.
So the thing is, they fire Richt because 10-2 isn't good enough, right?
And then 10-2 for, like, 15 years isn't good enough.
And then they bring in Smart, and literally overnight, they go from 10-2 to 8-4, and their recruiting goes from 10th in the country to number 1 in the country overnight. It's basically they brought this guy in because they know he's going to let the boosters do whatever they want.
Right.
And then they get a ton of talent.
Which they generally have always had, though.
But it's a different level than Richt. They were always like in the 5 to 10 range under Richt, not like getting number 1 overall classes.
Okay.
Which is the difference now. So.
And he still hasn't had a quarterback. I mean, Fromm was all right. He was fine. But, I mean, can you name the other quarterbacks at Georgia other than Jake Fromm? And you don't get to say Justin Fields because he never played quarterback.
Well, JT Daniels now, but
he played 2 games. DeJuan Mathis?
Yeah,
I saw him at Oak Park, man. And I saw him going to Ohio State, and I was like, I will take 4 years of DeJuan Mathis right now.
I do think it's kind of funny the way Saban just turns into this like supernova whenever he faces like his former assistants.
I mean, okay, but he also is the best college coach maybe ever, probably ever.
Probably. It's not even a probably at this point. But he takes it to another level.
He also has
a former assistant, like with the 2 D'Antonio beatdowns, the way he's just ripped Smart
D'Antonio
apart.
Oh, well, okay, but like beating Michigan State for Alabama is not something that they're worried about.
But they pour it on in those games.
Well,
I mean, you look at his record against his former assistants. It's wild.
No, I understand. That's I mean, that's the Belichick thing, right?
Yeah.
But also, when you have that kind of talent and you play in a meaningful game, he doesn't play in meaningful games. Like, remember they almost lost to Florida and everyone's like, oh, and then they have like, I didn't see all the A&M game, but
are you talking about Alabama?
Yeah.
Well, they've been kind of like down this year, and their offense was sputtering in November, and then
it's people that like happened. Looking for hopium, right? Like, it's just,
I mean, they played 1-score games and probably should have lost to Auburn. Like, they looked genuinely vulnerable,
and yet
they
still didn't lose to Auburn, and they still didn't lose to LSU because they don't lose games when they need to win games. I mean, that's a hot take in terms of, like, it's not quantifiable. It just is backed up by the record of the last 15 years. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, they lose to LSU 9-6 in what people say is, like, one of the worst games ever, except it was really one of the best games ever if you watched it.
Yeah, that's not a worst game ever.
Oh, people hated it.
The legendary Cheez-It Bowl is one of the worst games ever, but
is that something the Lions did?
No, remember the Cheez-It Bowl a few years ago? Between TCU and Cal, it ended 10-7 in overtime and had 9 interceptions between the two teams.
Oh, man. Okay. You win that one. But that 9-6 game, and then they play them for the national championship, like, what, a month and a half later, 6 weeks, two months later, and they destroy them.
Yep. But Alabama was a better team that year, I think.
Probably, but they lose games when they can afford to lose games. The only time, I mean, count the number of times when they've lost a game that they couldn't afford to lose, and it's like the kick six game, and
I mean, any of their playoff losses,
which have been like two or three, and
one to Clemson.
They lost to freshman Trevor Lawrence.
So two to Clemson, one to Trevor Lawrence,
one to Deshaun Watson, who are both NFL
one
players.
One to Cardale Jones. In 14, yeah. And then
okay,
I think
you're right.
That's the end of the list.
I mean, 2010 they lost three games, but they
well, were... in 19, when Tua got hurt,
yeah, to you know,
and then
maybe
they lost
the
that
best
game to Auburn.
I mean, LSU had the best offense in college.
Well, LSU had knocked them out, but then Auburn was the finishing blow, and they lost the Iron Bowl.
That's true, but I don't think that Alabama team was beating LSU in the playoff. I mean,
they weren't beating LSU.
That,
in the playoff,
but that was
probably
the one of what two times. I would still even maybe say that...
I think that 19 Ohio State team, if they had gotten past Clemson, had a shot against Bama. But the referees...
Yeah, had a shot against Bama, but not against LSU.
Yeah.
LSU embarrassed
No, I mean, like, a top-tier Bama team. Like, if I'm just thinking of, like, what teams the last decade could have beaten a top-tier Bama team.
I think
that's
that,
probably the list.
Yeah. So... I just think that people saying, oh, yeah, their offensive line isn't good, or their defense isn't what it was, or blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Like, you don't... They show up when they need to show up. It sounds so, like, radio hot takey. It's just... It's hard to argue with it.
Well, it helps to have a lot better players than all the other teams.
Welcome to sports, right? Like, it helps to have LeBron and MJ, and you can win titles. Like, oh, yeah, well...
I mean, that's kind of my thought about, you know, Iowa's game plan. In the game,
well,
in the game on Saturday, it's like I thought they came with a decent offensive game plan.
Sure.
It's just like the players they coach are bad, and they should probably coach them to be better players. Because
well, at least on offense, but even
yeah,
on
offense.
Even on defense, their defense hung around, and honestly, like
the defense did reasonably what it could. It just
and Cade had a bad first half.
Yeah. He definitely got rattled there.
He missed 11 of 18.
He missed that one throw to Cornelius Johnson on that out route that was kind of like, yeah, he's
was that
off
the
right
second,
now.
That was second half, though.
No, that was the first half.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Then the throw to All was...
Well, that one was a little trickier. Still a bad throw.
Because he had to sidearm it.
He had to sidearm it around that guy's hand.
But he averaged 3.4 an attempt.
Well, they also... I mean, part of what happened in that first half is that the field position thing messed them up because a lot of what Michigan does doesn't really work when you're in the shadow of your own goal line, right? All the arc motion and stuff. You can't run that kind of stuff because the guy running behind you is in, like, the end zone, and you're going to throw him the swing pass or the end arounds, all that stuff you can't do when you're backed up.
Yeah. Maybe you should tell AJ Henning not to catch a punt on a two then.
Yeah, that one wasn't great.
Hey, he caught all the punts.
He did catch all the punts. So.
And there were a lot, even in the second half when the game was like, okay. When Edwards completed that pass, they went up 14-0. Like, I was like, this game's over. It's not, and we're all going to sit here and grab our butts for a while, but like, they're not giving up three scores, especially after they kicked a field goal. Like, they were down and kicked a field goal to go up 14-3, and I'm like, they need two more touchdowns? Okay, maybe they'll get a Sean Spring slips, and they'll get a touchdown, but it's not happening twice.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa was still doing, like, some, you know, they had a few decent offensive possessions. You know, they had one in the second half. They had three in total, one on the first drive, one that got the field goal, and then one in the second half. But, you know, it was kind of basically, for me, it was what they did after the interception. When they didn't get points on that drive, you knew it was over. Because that was, like, the thing they needed to get back in the game, right? How do they win this game? They win it because Michigan starts hurting themselves. And Michigan hurt themselves, and Iowa didn't capitalize. So that was kind of, for me, the telling moment.
Well, they couldn't run the ball. I mean, Michigan just shut down their run. And they threw the ball. I think there was one zone bust where somebody got free over the middle and got down to the 9. But other than that, it was all these like rollouts, these misdirections. And then in the second half, didn't like Michigan start bringing the opposite end to contain those rollouts?
Yeah, they brought a linebacker into the backfield.
So the thing I noticed early is they were playing Harrell on rundowns.
They played Harrell a lot.
A lot. Game. And I mean, do you even remember him against Ohio State?
Jalen Harrell? He didn't play much in that game. He's played in other games this season.
He's played pieces, but this had to be as much as he's played all year.
I mean, that's kind of the McDonald thing, right? Like, we're going to play a lot of guys, yeah, and we're going to fit our personnel to our game plan. And, like, we're not going to run a walk-on linebacker out there because he knows the playbook.
Will you walk a strong side linebacker out over a slot receiver? I've seen some things, man.
But no, I mean, I thought the people on Twitter that in the first half were complaining, like, why does Iowa keep running the ball into the line? They're just setting downs on fire when they're throwing the ball decently well.
Wait, Michigan fans are complaining?
Media types, let's say that, including several people who work for the Michigan Daily. But
worked or work?
Work.
Oh.
And it's like, okay, but they're doing that because they have to. This whole effective passing game thing doesn't work if they're passing every down. This is not the air raid. Like, they're getting it because Michigan's selling out to stop the run. And so you have to settle for 2 straight 1-yard runs to have a shot
at third
to scheme
eight.
Your tight end open. Like, they don't have receivers who can get separation unless you RPS it. Like, that's it. That's how it works. These guys aren't good. They have to get a scheme win to get anyone open.
It was really funny because, like, during the breaks and before the game, they're doing these hype videos on the Jumbotrons. Plural, there's two.
Okay.
And they go through, like, the history of the year, right? And so you see, they show you, like, a highlight or two from every game, and then they post the score. And so, I mean, I remember all of Michigan's, and, you know, there's one or two in there that you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Like
the Rutgers game, yeah. But I don't even think they actually posted a highlight. There weren't many highlights. Anyway, so, but for Iowa, like, they show, like, Iowa 17, Northwestern 12.
12, yeah.
And then
their highlights are all interceptions.
Illinois 30, or Iowa 33, Illinois 23, or something. And I'm like, whoa, they almost lost to Northwestern and Illinois.
Yeah, they got outgained by Northwestern. And they only beat Illinois because they got two defensive slash special teams touchdowns.
You know, and I think that's the thing, one of the things that...
Although, Illinois had a nice season. I'm going to give Burt some credit. Like, he improved them quite a bit. So if they can get some guys, they could be a 6-6 team in the future.
It's very Big Ten. But I'm like, well, what I was going to say is that seeing, you know, Michigan was up 14-3 and then 21-3, and you're like, okay, but this feels more. And I was glad when they were aggressive and then ended up, the final was 42-3, because that's what the game felt like. And, like, it's nice to beat Iowa 42-3 because I feel like Michigan's played Iowa a number of times and get stuck in these Iowa games that
are
like
these... Well, the last two games ended 10-3 and 13-12.
Right.
So,
well, and the 13 game was close and the 11 game was close. I think they blew them out more in 12 when Iowa was bad. I think they were 4-8 that year. But, like, all these games that Michigan plays against these Iowa teams, and Iowa's not a bad team.
That's the way Iowa plays. They drag you down to the mud. And
they
want to
pig wrestle.
Yeah, just horrendous. And that 2019 game was probably the worst game I called in three years.
Jeez. Yeah, well, we punted a lot.
Well, yeah, because Michigan went up early, and then the game just never changed the rest of the game.
They get the ball to Corum, and he just runs away from everybody. And then the
Thanks
trick play...
to blocks from Wilson and St. Ristel.
Sure.
The McCarthy thing was just cute, but the rest of, like, the real blocks were Wilson and St. Ristel.
And then the pass from Edwards, which is the best pass by a skill position player of all time.
That was an interesting one because you see the lateral, and so you're like, your ears perk up, right? You're like, oh, trick play maybe, right? Because if it's a backwards pass, then all of a sudden you know what might be going on. And then you see him get ready to pass, and I've seen some bad skill position passes before.
20 yards underthrown.
I mean, MSU had some in the old days that, like, yeah, would get intercepted and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's just like a 50-yard tight spiral. Like, it's like a J.J. McCarthy throw.
So
or Craig, Joe Milton throw, but it's actually on target.
Craig turns to me at the game, and he goes, we saw him a couple years ago, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, did you know he could do that? And I was like, no. Did anyone other than the people on this team and maybe Bellamy? Of course, Bellamy's also a coach now. But when that happened, it's like, I mean, that was scheme. But the speed from Wilson to run away, they did the end around Henning,
yep.
And the run with Corum, they just couldn't keep up with Michigan.
Well, that's what we knew that, though, right? Iowa doesn't have athletes, and so right. I said they need to target the boundary, they need to get the linebackers and safeties in space.
But
and
generally speaking, over the years, Michigan has probably had better athletes than Iowa at skill positions, too.
Yeah, because they finally are doing some of this speed and space stuff.
That's sort of where I was going with all of this, is like, this is a team that has the capability to do it, and now they're starting to use their pieces, and
well, you're right. Like, I mean, it's really the offense, right? Because Gattis and Harbaugh you have together are kind of like those first couple years, like together, you had two competing styles that were right. not in harmony at all. And so
right.
it came out as this strange mishmash, right? Like it was like a meal where you get served orange juice and spaghetti.
It's the
what right? Like it's just two things that do not, like, are half of one thing, half of another, and they don't. They leave you upset, and it's not good. And now you have, like,
Brian called it something when we had Denard under Borges. It was the Denard-Borges fusion cuisine or something like that.
It didn't make a lot of, like, it didn't work schematically. But now you have it work, where it's like, okay, we have this power running scheme. We can hammer you inside, but, like, also now we can do all this stuff on the edges, going deep, all these other things, which then put pressure on your linebackers and safeties, and now they can't key in on the run, so now we can really mash and do the thing we wanted to.
I mean, they went five wide a number of times, and they'd motion Corum in, but they would start five wide, and they also went three tight ends. I mean, that's the thing about this particular offense, is it feels like, what's their base set? I mean, okay, Seth has talked all year about split zone, and, you know, they run some zone and stuff like that, and sure, but they also spread teams out, and they also run to the edges, and yeah. There's a lot of, like, it seems like you have to prepare for a ton of stuff to prepare for this offense.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing, is that everybody who had the start of the season was like, what happened to the speed and space? Like, you know, K can't run, so it's not speed and space, or what? Like, that was like...
Which is, there's an element
in
that.
An argument, of, and I was like, okay, but not really. Like, speed and space is about getting fast guys and putting them in conflict with the much slower defensive players. Like, that's all it is.
And getting them the ball.
Like, it's not about RPO. Yeah. It's not schematic. It's not the inner workings. It's a concept.
It's swing passes. It's bubble screens. Yeah, yeah. It's like, can you check Blake Corum one-on-one? And the answer usually is no.
So, I know, I thought it was a very good offensive game plan. And, I mean, you know, once they went up, even 14-3 at halftime, you were like, this game's probably over. Michigan just needs to protect the ball. And then when they get the third touchdown, it's like, okay, the game is now over.
And then they kept trying to score. And that was fun. I'm not going to lie. I was, like, there was a part of me that felt, no, I didn't feel bad for Iowa. I'm also for Iowa State, so screw those guys. But
it could be, like, an interesting subplot next year when Michigan goes to Kenner.
I was thinking about that. And I was like, oh, man, I hope a number of these players are back enough, because there's going to be people that remember that. Of course, if Spencer Petras is the quarterback, then I'm not really that worried. No?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Kinnick thing. You know, weird stuff happens there.
Maybe we'll, like, play at noon.
Then no, it will be a night game.
Do you think so?
I would have to check Iowa's schedule, but there's no other obvious option of who to do the Kinnick night game for, so.
Yeah. I want to go to that game, I think. Have you been to Kinnick? You haven't been to Kinnick, have you?
I have not been to Kinnick, no.
That it's fun. Like, and so here's the other thing. Like, we're around. I don't have any beef with Iowa fans. I mean, like I said, I root for Iowa State, so I don't like
Did you see Iowa Elvis?
No.
That's a bummer.
Did you see him on TV?
No. Oh. But I met him at the Big Ten tournament.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Was he a nice guy?
Yeah.
So here's the thing about, like, where we get these, like, kind of goofballs that dress up as things, and then they end up being, like, decent people, and they're just people that go and have fun, and their way of doing it is like, hey, if Elvis were an Iowa fan, this is what he would be. Or, like, the Big Nut and Little Nut guys or whatever, or in the Cowboy, the Ohio State Cowboy, like, this is just their shtick. But, like, I've heard from people that Big Nut is just a really good dude. He just gets really excited about his team, paints his face, wears stuff, and it's probably not what I would do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, whatever, man. If you're a decent guy and you go and you have fun, you root for your team, there's a lot worse people out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. But, I don't know.
Is there a part of you that wish you were at this game?
No.
Not one. There's no circumstance, not one.
I just like watching games on TV. I think that's my takeaway about.
I agree, but and we were in like the 13th.
But I also like had to write the recap. Well, so I would.
Okay, but I'm talking to Alex fan because this is like the secret segment, so this doesn't count. We can make up rules as we go along.
I've been in some cool environments and stuff, and
so you've only really been a Michigan fan for like 5 years, right?
Something like that.
6 years. So, my friend also texted me from who I grew up with and went to high school with, and he was like, well, I sent him a couple pictures. He's like, wow, that's really awesome, man. When was the last time Michigan won that? And I was like, 2004. And he goes...
But, like, really 2003
okay.
is the last time you actually... They won like, you beat Ohio State and actually won. Like, didn't limp to the finish line.
Sure. Yeah, I mean they went to the Rose Bowl in 2004 too.
But, yeah.
It's just like we sat 13 rows up in the end zone, which is not the seats that you would probably pick if you could just pick whichever seat you want to sit in the stadium. But I kind of liked being that close because part of it, especially in the second half, the game was over and you were excited and you cheered for touchdowns and the band was playing and all that stuff. And it was like, it's really cool to not only be there, but to be, like, in it. Like, when you sit, like, if you sit on the 50-yard line, but you're in, like, the fifth deck.
Sure.
Like, you're at the game, but you're not really there, right? Like, you're like, suspended in the air. And it just kind of felt like you were in and amongst what was going on. And that's sort of...
It's a matter of if you like the sort of mosh pit crowd environment, or you like the sort of more relaxed environment, right? Like, that's...
Well, right. But... Okay, and that's a fair point. I guess I'm not generally... I wouldn't consider myself a mosh pitter, like if I... Or a mosher pit, however you would say it. I don't really... That's not really my scene, but being in the middle of what's going on for these specific situations was, like, something I will always remember.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think for...
It's why you rush the field.
Sure.
Because you want to be there.
You know, I was at... Charlie's the night that Michigan made the Final Four the most recent time in 2018, and like the whole place went crazy and stuff. And
well,
like,
yeah, because everyone went playing, in the streets, right?
Yeah, they were playing, you know, the fight song over the speakers, yeah. And everyone was hugging and screaming. Like, that was fun, and I really like, you know, have videos from that and from those moments and stuff. And it's like a great experience. And like I did that, and I'm glad I did. And I'm like, cool. But I'm not really, like, dying to do it again because I did it once, and...
Well...
So...
No, but I think for the football thing, it's like, it's been 15 years.
Sure.
And, I mean, I went to a lot of games under Rich Rod and Hoke, especially road games, where you're driving home after you've lost by, like, 3 touchdowns, and you've just been embarrassed, and everyone's taunting you that you can't beat Toledo, and you're like, I have nothing to say because all of this is true and it sucks, and so then... And then people remind you that you can't beat Ohio State and all this stuff. And so now, you just won the Big Ten championship by 39 points, and you kicked Ohio State's butt. And it's like, you saw the thing that Juwan did to Harbaugh on the field, right? When they rushed the field, and he's like, they said we can't beat Ohio State. Now what? And he's like getting in Harbaugh's face about it.
I think for me, Ohio State was a much bigger achievement than this, like, because I think for part of it, for me, beating Ohio State and then seeing Minnesota topple Wisconsin and knowing you got Iowa in the title game, I was kind of like, well, we've won the Big Ten, like, right now, like,
right,
because this whole week, you know, I was kind of in my head just like, don't be too confident and stuff, and there was a thread Friday night that I was involved in with some of the usual suspects on Twitter.
That are everyone's usual suspects or your usual suspects?
No, the people that break down film.
Ah.
And there were some people on there, a person in particular, arguing that Iowa was this tricky matchup for Michigan. And you know, I was and I just the whole time I kept sitting there and I'm just sort of like, yeah, like I see some of these things, but like just looking at their schedule, looking at their results, watching their losses, watching their games.
Yeah.
All that kept being in my head was like, this is the worst 10-2 team come out of Power 5 conference I've seen, like, ever. Like, this is a bad team that is somehow 10-2. Like, they can't score on offense.
Yeah.
They constantly need defensive and special team scores to beat 5-7 opponents. Like, this is not a good team. And so...
Welcome to the Big Ten West.
That was in my head the whole week and stuff. And so...
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Was there ever a time between the end of the Ohio State game and the final bell of the Iowa game that you thought Michigan might lose to Iowa?
No.
Yeah, I didn't either. I remember, like, we were watching the basketball game, and I was, like, into it. And, you know, we're talking about a bunch of different things at the table, and then we're walking around town. And, like, you know, Michigan's going to play for the Big Ten title in, like, 3 hours. Like, this is a big deal. And, like, the game was the furthest thing from my mind. And then we got in line, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to play tonight. It's going to
be
cool.
Yeah, I wasn't stressed at all the whole day or, like, during the game.
No.
I mean, during the Ohio State game, you know, I might have put 17,000 steps in during the Ohio State game, just pacing around my enclosure. It was, and this one, like, yeah, I, you know.
It was hard to cheer during the Ohio State game because you'd been there before, and you're like, all right, we're up 8, that's good, but, like, it's not 80. And then they're up 15. You're like, it's still 2.5 scores, and you know they're going to get the 2-point conversion. Just they're going to fumble it forward and recover it somehow. And so you're just, I'm cheering, but you just too many self-defense mechanisms. And then, like, when they finally win, that's why rushing the field was so great, because you just yelled and screamed at everything. Like, I sang along to Mr. Brightside, and I haven't done that all year. Like, I don't hate the tradition. It's just, it's not really, like, I'm not just really, it's not really.
You're a boomer now.
No, I was born, like, 52. I've always been, like, I should be retired soon. That'd be great. Then I could be a blogger. I really wanted...
Oh, did you see the Oklahoma State-Baylor game? That's the last thing to mention.
I mean, it was on here, up to the right behind me, and I was trying to focus on the basketball game in front of me that had closed captioning on, which I was like, come on. None of the other TVs in the entire bar had closed captioning except that one. But yes, I saw it, and... I assume you mean the last play of the game.
Where he's almost
Michael Penix.
I mean, it's... That... Ben Mason is somewhere screaming and throwing things. That they ran, what, 7 plays from inside the 3 in the fourth quarter and scored 0 touchdowns. I mean, that's inexcusable. Just cannot happen. When you're a Power 5 team. Like...
Can we talk about one more thing?
What?
Remember when Michigan couldn't score in the red zone?
Yeah, well, Brymack had a tweet about
that
today.
What happened?
He said, like, 16 of the last 19 red zone possessions have ended in touchdowns.
Yeah.
Well, they figured it out. The Michigan State.
Thanks, Alex. I understand
the,
it now.
The Michigan
I was
State
ready
game
to
really
vague.
Toughened them up. I don't know.
Do you remember that? What was it? I think it was the 18 team when, like, they really beat down Michigan State, and then State's like, yeah, they're... We didn't think they'd be that tough, and so Brian and Ace went on this whole thing about how, like, how do you practice toughness in practice or whatever? Do you just, like, punch each other in the balls, like, and so you can toughen up or whatever? I thought it was funny. No, but that's a legit thing. That throw to all?
The one-handed catch?
Yeah, and Schoonmaker had one like that.
Yeah, the circus catch.
So the thing about all, and I probably told this, but, like, I went to see him in Dayton, and I was on the field before the game, and then I talked to one of his coaches, and he's like, what are you here for? And so I explained what I'm doing at FBO, and he's like, oh, you're going to love this kid. And I was like, yeah? And he goes, yeah, this guy's hands are, like, the size of, I don't know, something really huge.
Okay.
Anyway, he has really great, big, great hands. He catches everything. You're going to love him. I was like, awesome. They targeted him once. Like, the whole game, and it was way over his head. So he had no catches. So I drove to Dayton for 3 hours, and he had 0 catches, 1 target. But I got, like, a ton of him blocking. And then what's ironic is in 19, he can't catch anything.
And
he drops
last year.
Everything. Wow, okay.
Through 2 seasons, his drop numbers were pretty horrendous.
And then this year, he's like as reliable a pass catcher as there is.
Pretty much.
Including like that amazing circus catch. So that, I guess that's my next question. Are either of these guys NFL guys? Because Michigan sends tight ends to the NFL.
And all? Not yet.
You don't think so?
I haven't seen all on any boards. Last note before we get started.
Sure.
My tweet about Ian Bunting got 25 likes.
Do you remember Ian Bunting?
I do. He was on the team my freshman year.
Do you remember the catch that I referenced?
That's why I thought of him, because I was watching the Orange Bowl highlights.
Oh, yeah.
I was
After
watching
Jake
all,
Butt gets hurt.
I was watching all of the Michigan Bowl games from the Harbaugh era.
That's pretty rough.
And I was watching the Orange Bowl, and I'm like, wow, Ian Bunting, I remember him. And had literally not thought of him in, like, 3 years.
I mean, we'd hyped him up a lot, and we're like, this guy could be really good, and then he just never really was. But he had that 4th and 10, like, Jake Butt catch against Florida State. And I remember Brian tweeting, like, all right, this guy might be all right. And then that was probably the last catch he had at Michigan.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's how it goes.